Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Welcome back, everybody. We are The Whole Scoop. We're health and wellness. You know this by now. If you're just joining us for the first time, welcome. I am Carol Ferraci, a host, registered licensed dietitian, practiced for well over, 30-plus years, founder of Naturally Nutrition, Inc. You can find me there with naturallynutritioninc.com. If you are just joining us for the first time, then you need to know that the premise of this show is that our guests are always highly credentialed in the topics we discuss. That is the stipulation for being on The Whole Scoop. So all the information that you get here are from credentialed, well-qualified, thoroughly vetted healthcare professionals. So tonight obviously is never going to be an exception to that rule, but tonight is going to be a fun night too because we have a return guest that is just fabulous. I'll tell you about her again in a minute. I can't wait. But tonight's show is Kids Gotta Go With the Flow Too. Yes, they do. We haven't spoken about this particular topic, but if you've been following us, you know that this person has been with us a number of times, and we've talked about a number of different things with men and women, and now we're talking about kids. So before we get into it, I got to do the business and say, hey, I'm going to remind you that while our guests are always highly credentialed on the topics we discuss, it's recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. And the number to call in is 347-855-8894, 347-855-8894. You can also direct your questions and comments to our Facebook, The Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio group. So join us with that. Tell us what you want to hear. Tell us what you like, what you don't like, what you think we should have done more of or less of. Open to suggestions. You can blog in questions on that. And we will be taking questions later on in the show. So if you're calling in and you want to ask a question, remember to press the number one to become part of the queue so that I know that you have a question. Because some people are listening, as I can see you now. Some people listen and they just don't want to ask a question, and that's perfectly fine. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for being here. I'm glad you're here. You don't have to ask a question. But if you decide you hear something that kind of prompts you to think about something else, just press the number one, get in the queue, ask the question. At that time, I'm going to call out the last four digits of your telephone number, and then you'll know it's you that's on the air. So all that being said, I'll give you the number one more time, 347-855-8894. Okay, Jane Kaufman, she is back. If you've been following us with this series on going with the flow kind of thing, she's fabulous. Let me just tell you, she every time we have a show with Jane, we get more after questions because people also, I should also mention that we archive these shows. All these shows are archived, so please go ahead and access. We got a lot of people going to the archives. And then I get these questions out of the blue like, hey, but Jane, always when Jane is here, I get all kinds of questions later on. And so if you want to ask tonight, great. You want to ask on the Facebook, great. If you want to check out the archives later and ask a question, give us a nod on that too. Anyway, she is a practicing physical therapist for more than 30 years. She's a graduate of Ithaca College Physical Therapy Program and earned her master's at the University of Vermont. More recently, she was certified by the Biofeedback Certification Institute of America in pelvic muscle dysfunction and biofeedback, becoming one of only six healthcare professionals in the Northeast to earn this prestigious certification. See, I told you my people here, we don't have any schleps on this show. They're fabulous, and this woman is just amazing. You're going to love her. Jane's career has included practices at Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center in New York City, Brattleboro Memorial Hospital in Vermont, and at the former Medical Center Hospital of Vermont, where she supervised the Department of Physical Therapy. She has also worked and managed at the Burlington Area Physical Therapy Practices, and she Her speaking resume includes annual lectures for the University of Vermont's physical therapy program, OBGYN residents, as well as presentations for grand rounds for the family practice and OBGYN departments at Fletcher Allen Healthcare. You know, I love reading people's bios, and I'm just always amazed and thrilled. But let me just tell you, I'm going to add this much with Jane. I'm so grateful that she's here and that she's a regular guest on the whole scoop. Because let me tell you something. The one thing I'll tell you about Jane that I love the most about her being on this show is that not only is she a plethora of information, and she's so well credentialed and so into what she does, and she just always, I always learn from her. But the thing that you're going to love about Jane, if you haven't heard her, is that she's real and she's down to earth. And everything that she says, she puts it in terms where you and me, the people who don't have the degree that she has and the certifications that she has, we can just understand what she's saying as she's saying it, and she makes for an easy conversation. And I'm so grateful for that, and I'm so grateful to her. And with that, let me just say, hey, Jane, are you with us?
I am here. I'm here, and I can't wait to start and talk about the things that I love, which is poop and pee. So when we're ready, we can get started, Carol.
Have at it, Jane. Let's go for it. Why do kids got to go with the flow, too? Like, how often does this happen? Is this a real major issue? Some of the stats kind of just say, you know, they kind of give generic kind of stats for 20% of this, 10% of that. But, like, tell me how real this is when you practice it on a daily basis.
So it is a real issue, and it's a real issue to parents. And people who have children know that, why isn't my child potty trained? My child's 4 years old, and they prefer the diapers, but their best friend was trained at two. What's wrong with my child? Why isn't my child ready? Or I hear my child still has pee accidents in school, and no one else in the class does. What's going on? So, you know what? Sometimes it's almost as much of a parent issue as it is a child issue. And it's really fascinating because, you know, no, there are some interesting quotes about it, because no child ever dies from incontinence. But when a child wets or has poop accidents in school, they honestly wish that they did, because they're so mortified. But they don't like to talk about it. They like to, like, just block it out. And they're not going to go home and run in the house and say, I had a poop accident today, Mom. That's not typically what you hear. So sometimes they try to hide it because they're so mortified by the presence of this problem. And you're only a child once. You can't get those years back. So if you've got a problem with poop or pee, and your parents say you can't go to sleepaway camp, or you can't have a sleepover because you wet the bed, or you have these accidents, you don't get those years back. You can't be 18 years old and go, okay, I want to go to sleepaway camp. Yeah. So it's about getting a child to be a child and getting everyone on board to help a child improve a problem. The interesting thing that when you talk about statistics, typically physicians will tell you, pediatricians or primary care, whatever you choose to use for your child's health care needs, the physician says, your child's fine. Just let the child outgrow it. It'll be okay. Don't worry about it. And that's true to a great extent. That's totally true. But when everybody's a little freaked out about it, or it's summertime and you're worried about camp, or it's school time and your child's going to kindergarten or first grade and you're really worried about it, then it's time to A, have a real close conversation with your pediatrician or healthcare provider, and B, maybe seek out a healthcare provider, if you choose to, that can help work on this. People like me, physical therapists that treat this on a daily basis, are very rare. So I live way up in northern Vermont. I live actually an hour south of the Canadian border. And I have a private practice, and my private practice includes treating all ages. I think the youngest I ever saw was a very precocious 3-year-old, and the oldest I ever saw was a very precocious 97-year-old. We see men, we see women, children, doesn't matter. We treat them all with a particular type of treatment that we use to have them help visualize their muscles so they can gain control over it. But my point is, there are a lot of us in the country that do this on a regular basis. And just to give you some information, maybe starting about 6-7 years ago, or where I live, there's a big medical center in town, and I'm independent. I don't work for the medical center. But the doctors there kept calling me and saying, the pediatric doctors kept saying, you need to come do a grand rounds, which is a big conference where the doctors come and sit and listen to you, and you do a presentation to them. Usually it's 7 a.m. in the morning. And they said, you need to come and you need to talk to us, and you need to tell us. Well, I knew as soon as I did that, I would open the floodgates and I'd have more kids on my caseload than I knew how to handle. So I had to wait to the point I was ready to be able to have more room for kiddos on my schedule. So, I don't know, maybe about 4 years ago now, I agreed to go in and do a presentation. And not only did I do an actual physical presentation to about 120 physicians in our community, I was broadcast throughout New York State and all of the state of Vermont. And so since then, my portion of my practice is mostly treating kids because there are so many of them that have issues. And it's very fascinating. So I'm going to talk about the way we go about approaching some of these issues for you. So there's, as a parent, there's a couple of things that stand out in my mind, first of all. A child needs to poop every day on a regular basis. Think about whether you really know whether your child or maybe your grandchild poops on a regular basis. So we have a saying in our office, which is the poop drives the pee. What that means is if you don't poop regularly every day, the right kind of poop, the right consistency of it, then that waste, and it's your poop tube or your colon is a trash can, and we'll talk about that in more detail in just a minute. But if you don't poop on a regular basis every day, your trash can overflows, and when it does that, when it gets really full, it presses on your bladder, and your bladder goes, and your bladder gets a hiccup, and it goes, ah! And what it does then is it leaks. So a poop issue, you may not leak poop in your pants, but you end up with more of a pee issue. Almost every child, and this is not something people think about. So almost every child is considered, quote unquote, constipated. They don't poop the right kind of poop on a regular basis until proven otherwise. So what does that mean? You've got to really prove that your child is pooping on a regular basis. So parents at work, your child gets up, gets ready for school, zooms out the door, runs to the bus. Maybe you have to drive them. Whatever the case is, maybe your child walks to school. But people don't necessarily, parents or grandparents don't necessarily know when their child actually poops. And what do they poop? So to a child, they might go in and sit on the toilet and poop out something that's maybe a golf ball-sized piece of poop, or maybe it's a couple of raisin-sized pieces of poop. And they go, yep, I pooped. So when the parent says, did you poop? They go, yep, and then off they go. Well, that's not pooping. That's not the kind of poop we want to get out. And so they really end up being constipated. And it's not uncommon for me to hear in my practice when I start asking about that, the parent will say, oh, yeah, he or she poops every day. And I look at the child, and the child goes, no, I really don't. And the parent goes, oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do. I know they do. And the child goes, well, wait a minute, Mom. No, I really don't. And the parent then goes, what, you don't? The child goes, no. Sometimes it really hurts to poop, so I don't go. And the parent's like, I didn't know that. So we really have to, as parents or grandparents or whoever's in charge of the child, pay attention to when do they really go to the bathroom. And there are a lot of physicians. Now, folks, please, whoever is listening to this, please remember, I am not a medical doctor. I am a physical therapist who's chosen this as my lifelong career as a way to help people overcome something that's embarrassing. But if you talk to physicians, most pediatricians or primary care physicians don't really understand what poop is all about. The poop specialists, are what we call pediatric gastroenterologists. They deal just with poop in a kid population. And what they say is a child should poop out something that is at least 6 inches long on a daily basis. It should be the shape of a kind of a snake, you know, long, totally soft, no cracks and clumps in it. Or it should look, and I'm sorry, this is a little gross, but this is what the doctors love, and this is what the term they love to use. It should look like a plop of soft serve ice cream or a plop of oatmeal or pudding. That's
wow.
How poop should come out. Yes, it's not anything anybody speaks about. And so that's why typically kids, and honestly, if you really were to ask most adults, would be constipated, withholding their poop until proven otherwise. So what you want is the long and soft, and it needs to be soft, and it needs to be daily. It could be twice a day. It could be every 2 days, although doctors don't typically like that in kids. But if it were long and soft every 2 days, they'd probably say, okay, let that go. That's totally fine. So those are things to really consider. So how do you get that? Well, make sure there's fiber in the child's diet. Look at the foods that you eat. If your child likes sandwiches, make sure you have a high-fiber bread. So a high-fiber bread would be something that maybe has 5 grams of fiber a slice or more. If they like oatmeal, oatmeal has fiber, but there's an instant oatmeal that has double the fiber. Do they like fiber bars? Do they like fruits? Do they like prunes? Now, it's interesting. Prunes, a lot of kids like them because they're sweet. Prunes don't have so much fiber, but they have the sweetener. Natural sweetener in a prune is called sorbitol, and that actually helps to loosen your poops. So it actually helps you poop. So, you know, make sure your child eats correctly. Now, add to that, and don't forget to let me talk about pee, because I could talk a whole hour just about poop, but we got to make sure I stay on topic here and get to pee. But with the pooping, when you eat something, first thing you do in the morning is what? You get up and you go pee. Make sure your child does that. Second thing, what do? Your child should have something to eat or drink. A lot of kids don't want to. I get that. But if they could even have half a fiber bar, have half an English muffin, have something that stimulates a reflex in our body called the gastrocolic reflex. It's the connection between the small intestine and the large intestine. And that reflex starts working about a half an hour, about 30 minutes after you eat. And what it does is it opens a door from the small intestines into the large intestines, and it starts putting more waste into the large intestine. And basically what your body's doing is saying, hey, you just ate a half an English muffin. And you know what? We're going to digest that in just a minute. But we got to make sure the old poop is out of the body before we make new poop. So it opens the door from the stored waste from the day before in the small intestine, where your body's sucking all the moisture and the vitamins and the minerals out of it to make the kids grow big and strong and healthy. And then that valve opens, and basically, this is very basic, the liquid stool goes into the large intestines, and this valve is on the lower right side of the belly. And so the colon goes up on the right side and across the middle, across where your belly button is, and then it drops down the left side, and it drops down to the back where the poop hole is, which is called the anus. And so as the poop travels through that, it starts out as a liquid, but as it travels through that tube, more moisture is taken out of it to digest, to add more vitamins and minerals into the body. And so finally, when it gets to the piece that drops down into your lower intestine to get to the anus. It's more firm. It should be long and soft at that point. And when it hits the end of the muscle called the sphincter, it sends a signal to the brain, and the signal is a whisper, and it says to the child, do you want to go to the bathroom now, or do you want to wait? Well, if the child is playing a video or computer game before school, and typically kids want to poop in the morning, the child says to the brain, forget it, I'm busy, leave me alone. So then the child goes out, gets on the bus, gets to school, and starts playing, and pretty soon that poop gets harder and harder, because the body says, well, it's sitting here, we're going to get more of the liquid out of it, make it harder. And so if you poop out little pellets or golf ball-sized pieces or a clump that looks like a clump of grapes, it's been sitting in your body. And the smaller and clumpier and dried out it is, the longer it's been sitting there. And that's constipation. So typically we're really busy and we miss our signals because our signals are very soft and quiet. And parents are busy getting ready for work or dropping the child to daycare before the child has to go to school or dropping the child off, and everybody runs late and things get crazy. And the next thing you know, the child doesn't go to the bathroom. And that, we talked about this with adults. One of the times we talked about this in adults, they skip their signal because they're in too much of a hurry. So these kids are in a hurry. And they may get up at 6:45, eat breakfast, or maybe not eat, and zoom out the door at 7. Now let's say school starts at 8. Yep. Now let's say school starts at 8. And the child has decided, no, I can eat breakfast at school. So they eat breakfast at school at 8. And then they should go sit on the toilet according to the rule of wait a half hour, then go sit on the toilet. You don't sit for a half an hour. You go wait the half hour. Go play, go get dressed, go get, do whatever it is you're going to do. But let's say you're at school now, and you go in and you have your breakfast, and so a half hour after that at 8:30, would be the time you'd go to the bathroom. But at 8:30, as a first grader or second grader, you're playing with your friends. Think about it. If you were a kid, would you stop playing and then go to the bathroom? No.
Yeah,
you'd play,
too often, right?
And you'd ignore it. Right. And then at some point during the course of the day, perhaps the poop would just explode out of your body because it says, I'm tired of sitting inside your belly, and it's time to get out, and it will just cause an accident in their pants. So that's how a poop issue starts. Or it's just darn backed up and just plain doesn't come out, and it interferes with the bladder signals. So the poop drives the pee. We got to get the poop piece under control. But as parents, do we really know what our kids are doing all the time? And the answer typically is no. So what you've got to put your child, as much as you don't necessarily want to, you need to have a bit of a structure to your day if your child has these issues. So what structure? Well, that means make sure breakfast occurs at the same time. And if it's not breakfast because the child won't, maybe the child will have a cup of hot chocolate. And then after that, even a half a cup, something to start to stimulate the reflex. And then after they have that, go up, get dressed, brush their teeth, get ready for school, then go sit on the toilet. But that will mean getting up earlier. That will mean taking better care of how much time you have before you have to go out and get the school bus. So these are things that you have to look at closely. So the parent has to really analyze, what is the child's day really like? What are the components to the day? When's lunch? When's recess? Is recess before lunch? Is recess after lunch? If recess is after lunch for a half hour, when you run around, when you get exercise, you get better poops to come out. So at the end of recess, come in 5 minutes early. But maybe recess says, no, you can't. You have to stay out the full time. Then the parent has to intervene and talk to the school and say, my child needs permission to come in 5 minutes early to go sit on the toilet. So however it needs to work, you have to pay attention to your child's schedule and track it and find out when are they having a problem and let's see what we can do to fix it. So a child 30 minutes after a meal should sit on the toilet and sit for about 5 minutes. They don't have to sit for long, but 5 minutes to see if the poop will come out. And if it doesn't, then they can work at a little bit of a push to get it out. But honestly, if the poops want to come out, they may actually be urgent enough they'll start to empty at that point when the child is sitting on the toilet. But this process has to get repeated, repeated, repeated to develop the brain's ability to say, oh, this is what you want me to do. Okay, I can manage this. I can do it right now. That's not a problem. So these are things that we want to look at for a child. And it can be challenging for the parent because it means you have to pay attention. But no computer games, no playing. If their time comes, typically you have to say, do something else for that 30 minutes after a meal. Then go sit and poop. If you've done what I've asked you to do, then you can play Minecraft or do whatever on your computer or your iPad. Because I can't tell you how many kids I see in my office who choose to poop or pee in their pants because they're busy playing Minecraft and don't want to take a break. And the parents will say to me, I don't want to ask them to stop playing because they're quiet and happy.
Wow.
So I let them play. And I'm like, and they play right through it.
Wow. So a lot of this sounds like it's a training issue for both parents and kids.
It is.
But what about, and I'm sure you're going to talk about this, but I kind of want to hold the thought, let people know that we're going to get to it. But that's not always the case, right? There are some medical issues.
There can be medical issues, yes. And there can be all kinds of, so a child never has a weak muscle, or very rarely can have a weak muscle. They usually have a tense muscle. They have a tense muscle for a variety of reasons, and this applies both to poop and pee, but I wanted to mention the poop part first because if you get the poop under control and you know what they're pooping out and you know what it looks like and you know when they're doing it and you can track all of that, sometimes that's enough to clear up a pee problem or to clear up the bedwetting. So the poop really needs to come first. But things that can influence the need for spending closer time on the pooping are issues associated with perhaps birth defects, things that when a child, some kids can be born without an anus. It's called an imperforate anus. So they have to have a colostomy bag, and they have to wait a while, and then they get the surgeons rebuild their body, and then everybody says, okay, now they can poop normally, but no one's ever taken the time to show the child what they have to do on the toilet. And it's fascinating to me because these kids come to me, and everyone assumes this child is now 5 years old, so just poop. Go about pooping. But nobody's taught them how to poop because they never had to poop on the toilet. They had a bag there because they had to let their body rest while the surgeons did all their surgical things. And that's only one tiny piece of the stuff that can happen. But children can learn to do this. So say your child has cerebral palsy. Can they learn to poop? Absolutely.
Hmm.
And if they have a lot of spasticity or a lot of extra tone in their legs, we just have to work through that extra tone. That means sometimes they have to stretch the inner thighs of their legs before they sit on the toilet. Or maybe these kiddos have to sit backwards on a toilet to keep their legs apart so their legs don't scissor together while they're sitting on a toilet. But they can learn to poop just like anybody else. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
No, sorry. I was going to say, so you really do have to think differently in order to get the same result, and it's okay to do that because you're looking for the result. And
correct, and that's a beautiful way to put it. Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly right. You want to be able to think for the child and help them figure it out. And this brings up a really interesting point because sometimes parents will tell me their child wants to squat on the toilet seat to poop. Uh-huh. And they'll ask me about that. And I'll say, first of all, in our society, it's not an acceptable way to poop. Secondly, people in my field research everything. There's a research study that looks at different positions to poop, or to pee for that matter. And when people choose to squat with their feet on the toilet seat, they actually can't poop as well as they can if they elevate their feet on a stool. That's why this whole concept of a quote-unquote squatty potty came about, because you want your knees slightly higher than your hips to mimic a squat posture, but your body's supported. So your feet have to touch the floor. How many kids let their feet touch the floor? A lot of schools don't have pediatric toilets, and yet it's an elementary school. What do you have at home? If you have the comfort-sized toilets, your child needs a stool for their feet. If your child has a little tiny bottom, their bottom's going to sink into an adult toilet. So they're trying to hold themselves up so they don't fall into the toilet, and they can't relax. You got to have what's called a transitional toilet seat, okay? So these kids need to sit comfortably to relax on the toilet, to relax their pelvic floor muscle. If you're squatting on a toilet seat with your feet perched on the edges of the toilet seat, the study says that is the worst position to poop. The best position to poop is sitting on the toilet seat, leaning forward, your feet are slightly elevated, and your elbows are on your knees and you're slightly bent forward, relaxed and resting. You can't be poking your younger brother who comes in the bathroom to bother you. You can't be unrolling the toilet paper while you're sitting there or bouncing your feet up and down. As an adult who's listening, you try that. You can't go to the bathroom if you do that.
Right.
It doesn't work. So they have to sit quietly like a relaxed statue. And that's a challenge for a lot of kids, especially kids who are on the spectrum or who have ADHD. Those issues play a role in this as well. And whether you have a poop or a pee problem, factors that influence that problem, it doesn't matter whether it's poop or pee. We just started with poop because we have to get that under control to make sure the pee is under control. But the poop issue that happens, or the pee issue, can sometimes and often be the result of stress and anxiety. And kids don't always talk about this. Maybe it's stress and anxiety because there's somebody teasing them or bullying them at school because they smell because they've pooped in their pants. Maybe it's stress or anxiety because the workload at school is really challenging. Maybe it's because they're on the spectrum and they're in just their own little world and they look at things a little bit differently. Maybe it's ADHD or ADD or ODD or any of these syndromes where kids don't want to be able to do it, because if you've got ADHD, your head is in a million and one places, and the last thing you want to be doing is sitting on a toilet relaxed. You don't know how to do that.
Right.
So stress, anxiety are key features. Divorce. Parents have separate homes. Mom says, eat carrot sticks, celery, and sit on the toilet. And Dad says, I don't care if you eat a hot dog and a Diet Coke. As long as you eat, that's all I care about. Or maybe Dad doesn't pay any attention. So a child spends time with mom, and mom feeds them right. Then they go to the other parent's house, and the other parent doesn't pay attention. So you have two good days and three bad days. Or the child lives with both parents, but the after-school program is sometimes after school. Sometimes it's one grandma. Sometimes it's the other grandma. And on weekends, maybe the child goes to a daycare provider. And to try to get the whole team on board is challenging for parents. It's a full-time job to start to put this together.
They can't stay on a schedule like that.
You have to. Or you're in school for 6 weeks, and then you're off for a week of vacation, and then your whole routine changes. So to make this work, you need a commitment from everybody. And then it can work beautifully. But the challenge is getting everybody on board. And remember the old saying, it takes a village. Well, it really does. It takes everyone to work with your child.
Yeah.
So things to think about. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, so tell me about the ramifications of, are there long-term effects to maybe a child that was never quite able to regulate and just, you know, do they go through this most of their lives? What ages are we talking about here, or how does, you know, do these things work themselves out? Excuse the pun there, but.
Right.
You know.
So there's a condition called, it's a medical term called encopresis. And encopresis is when you've got hard stool that is blocking the colon, so you get liquid, pasty, stinky stool out around it. So a parent sees they don't poop, then they poop this hard, pasty poop in their pants, and they get a backup. So the parent says, oh, well, look, they've had diarrhea. Well, you know, but they don't. It's a sign that they're backed up and blocked inside. And encopresis is a challenge for pediatricians to treat because the environmental, home, sociological, psychosocial factors are so important and oftentimes difficult to manage. So these kids can get better, then they fall back and they get worse, and then they get better and then they get worse. So it can take, even with consistency, up to a year, according to the statistics, to get the child's colon to shrink. Because what would happen, the colon's like a balloon. It stretches when it blows up full of poop. And then when you get the poop out, the colon is kind of floppy. And so the next time poop comes down, it can't touch the walls of the colon because the colon's floppy and roomy. And then the child doesn't know when the poop comes out, and the poop scoots out in their pants. So you have the liquid poop followed by the hard poop followed by, I couldn't tell mom and dad that I had the poop. I didn't know. I didn't feel it. And then parents are like, well, how could you not feel that? But they really didn't. So you see how
wow.
complicated it can get? But we just want to know,
I mean,
when do our kids poop?
I apologize. I was just kind of making a comment. I had no idea it was this complicated.
Yeah, it's a complicated and challenging factor. And kids are mortified by it, and they might tell you, I don't care, I just want to go play in the woods with my fort and my sticks and just hang out. And parents will cry when I see them, and the kids are like, what are you worried about? I don't care. But everybody cares. Even the kids care. They just don't want, they want to be tough about it, and they don't want to mention it. And you want to get it under control because, believe it or not, this is a different kind of statistic, but 44% of childhood voiding dysfunctions end up to be adult dysfunctions. We're going to start talking about kids now. So if you leave it all alone, it's just going to come back, or it's going to continue. It's not really going to go away until you fix it. So you just have
wow.
to address it and be willing to look at it and talk to your physician. And it is a challenge for physicians. I hear it from pediatricians all the time. Like, it's a frustrating problem to deal with. So that's a poop thing. But let's because we're running out of time, let's talk about pee issues, okay? Because that's a whole other ballgame. Once you get, let's just say now you have the poop under control, but there's still a pee problem. So let's look at peeing, okay? So a common problem with peeing is bedwetting. So kids should begin to gain bedtime control around they should gain control around 2 or 3 during the day and maybe 4 or 5 at night. But really, if your child doesn't have control at 6, is that bad? No. Okay? So you want to first check the poop, and I will always say that. You always want to check the pooping first because that will make a difference. But you also want to make sure fluids stop after dinner. And in our lifestyle, especially if they're older siblings, you come home from school, everybody's in a mad dash, get your homework done quick. We got softball, basketball, gymnastics, band, whatever. And practice is maybe from 6 to 7 or 7 to 8. And then you come home and everybody's starved, so they want something else to eat or something else to drink. and then they wake up wet in the morning. So you want to be able to stop all fluids after dinner, but that dinner time with sports is a real challenge. You just have to make sure your kids hydrate well during the day so they need less fluid at night. You only want to have water with dinner, not milk. There's a subgroup of kids, a very small subgroup, but they will get wet at night because they had dairy products, and it's based on the protein in the dairy that in this subgroup they may have more symptoms of incontinence if they have it, if they have the dairy at night. It doesn't mean don't have the dairy. It just means change the kind of dairy that you give them. You want to make sure kids void right before they go to bed. A lot of kids don't. Parents are downstairs, kids upstairs, kid gets into bed, reads a book, falls asleep or falls asleep on the couch and doesn't pee. And then they wet the bed because they didn't pee before they went to bed. So they have to make sure they go to bed. And then what you want to do is really give them that positive reinforcement that they can gain control. For some kids, you can get a bedwetting alarm. You can get it through the bedwettingstore.com, I believe is the website. But for kids who have a poop problem or for kids who aren't emptying during the day and they're more apt to leak at night or they're having fluids late at night, the alarm isn't always the answer. It's changing the behaviors that will give you a greater success. Nighttime control typically will happen around the age of 4 or 5 at night with 2 or 3 years old during the day. Kids with ADHD, because they're distracted, they don't pay attention to these soft, subtle signals, are more than about 3 times likely to have issues with incontinence, urinary incontinence. Caffeine, soda. Some kids drink coffee. You'd be surprised. That's going to increase your urinary incontinence because it's a diuretic.
Uh-huh.
So these are things to look at. When do you have your fluids? What do you have for fluids? A lot of kids take a water bottle to school and then get told, I can't use it in school, or I don't like to drink it, or I take sips out of the water fountain in school. Well, a child typically should drink at least 36 ounces of clear fluids a day, and that doesn't mean high fructose corn syrup and soda. That means water. It can be flavored water. You can get a water bottle that allows you to put some fruit in the top. When you tip the water bottle over, it strains. There's a strainer in the top, and so the water goes through and hits the fruit, and then they get a little bit of a flavor. A lot of kids love that because they get a little extra taste of something in the water. So we want to be able to make sure that they have adequate fluid before they have dinner so they're not super hydrating at night after dinner. So this is an interesting comment. Children rated wetting themselves at school as the third most catastrophic event behind losing a parent and going blind.
Say that again.
Third most catastrophic. That children rate that getting wet at school during the day is the third most catastrophic event in their lives behind losing a parent or not being able to see.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So what we want to be able to do is teach them, first of all, find out why are they wet. Are they wet because they're not pooping? Correct the pooping. That may fix it. Are they wet because they don't drink clear fluids? So just like adults, if you folks ever listened to my first couple of shows, you got to have clear fluids because the stinkier, more concentrated your pee is, the more you're going to leak and the more it's going to stink and the more everybody's going to know. So you have to drink your fluids. If your child is not allowed a water bottle in the class, you need to go to the school and say, they need to be able to drink. This is a medical thing. By the third grade, and at least in the schools that I know way up here, I don't know where you are and whether the school systems feel the same way, so I can't comment on everybody. But at least up here they say, by third grade, these kids better be clean and dry because otherwise it's considered a health hazard in the schools. And in some rural school systems, they will, the school system will call the parent and say, you need to come change your child because we won't do it because it's a hazard, a health hazard.
Wow.
So these are issues that you face. In some schools, in some daycares, there isn't a door over the bathroom. So in many daycares that I have heard about, don't know where you are and whether it's an issue, there's no door. So how does a child go sit down and poop, or how does a child pee if they're worried their friends are going to see them? Or they have to line up at the schedule everybody else goes, and they get like 1 minute in there, hurry, 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 and they have to go sit on the potty, pee, get off the potty and go. Or they don't want to go because they're having too much fun.
Wow.
And same
I
with
had
after
no
school
idea
programs.
I really
it's
no
unbelievably
idea.
Complicated. It's crazy.
It's unbelievably
complicated.
There are so many dynamics involved. I mean, other people, environmental,
yes.
family situation. I mean, it's amazing. It's just amazing.
Yes.
But it makes
yes.
sense. It really does. We just don't take time to think about it because we tend to take this topic for granted that it just happens. That's what you do.
Right.
And it's not that. And especially, like you said, if kids are on the spectrum or they're having some other issues of health issues, it's a big thing. I think maybe just to kind of give an idea, as we do, we are running out of time a little bit, but, you know, I think it might behoove us if you just spent a minute or two explaining why excreting is important, you know?
So excreting is your body waste. It's your toxins in your body. Your poop is your trash. Do you let your kitchen trash can overflow with stinky garbage? No, you empty it. So the wrapper, the candy wrapper, is your trash. Kids' trash is what's in their poop tube. Your leakage, your urinary incontinence, is the old stale coffee that's still in the coffee cup. You got to dump it down the sink. Or the stale milk that's all curdled, and you got to get rid of it, and you pour it down the sink. That's the waste. And, you know, just for an interesting aside, it was first diagnosed in 77 AD when they boiled mice. Don't ask me what they did with those mice, but they boiled mice to use as a treatment for urinary incontinence in kids. And in 1472 AD, the first book of pediatric diseases was published with an entire chapter on urinary incontinence as kids. So it's been around since the beginning of time. It's always been
there. Wow.
But you have to get rid of your waste. So a kid that doesn't poop or pee feels sick. They don't feel good. They're not hungry. They become lethargic. They don't want to do anything. And then don't you get more depressed if you can't play and run around and have fun, or you're worried about accidents? See, it spirals out of control. Kids are supposed to be happy and run around. They're supposed to go to camp. They're supposed to giggle all the time, and they're supposed to be full of energy. And they're supposed to be human eating machines. They're supposed to be hungry all the time and thirsty. And when's dinner? And running around and having a good time. And when they're lying on the couch curled up in a ball because they can't poop or pee, you got a problem. Or maybe they get lots of urinary tract infections. And that would be girls more than boys. But you want to be able to treat that so they don't rely on antibiotics all the time.
Which is another thing we tend to do really well. We don't look
yeah,
at the actual
we rely on medicine.
We go with the medication. And then, you know, that's not always the best choice, to just go with a medication or go with a laxative or go with, you know,
right.
what we find over the counter. I think we should probably...
The pediatric gastroenterologists tell me taking the laxatives is an actually safe bet, and they reassure me that all the time. But taking antibiotics presents a real challenge based on the whole overuse of antibiotics. So doctors are like, let's get away from that, and let's get these kids to get their pee out. you can have problems when you back up all your pee. It's like backing up the interstate because the exit ramp is closed and the traffic backs up for miles. Well, in your bladder, when your bladder won't empty, it backs up into your ureters, the big tubes that go to your kidney. And kids who have that, and some of you parents may know, may have a child or a friend or a nephew or a niece that has what we call hydronephrosis, where there's too much fluid in the in the kidneys because it backs up in there. And that's a real health issue. So you want to be able to help kids work through this. But your basic kids who just don't take the time on the toilet, they hop off the toilet really quickly. Little girls who love to listen to what the teacher says, but there's a bathroom in the class. So they go in to pee, sit there, go psh, 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 hop off the toilet and leave because they don't want to miss what the teacher's saying. But then they pee in their pants. Or they go in and they go, I'm not peeing on that toilet. All the boys peed all over the seat or the floor. I'm not using that. Or they're afraid to use the three-stall bathroom down the hall because the big kids will say, who's in there? Who shows it up? And, you know, so kids get nervous. We have to figure those out. And a parent can say, which bathroom do you use? Are you comfortable with that one? Would you like to go down to the nurse's office? Make sure the younger kids have that private bathroom. Younger kids in a school maybe from K to 5th or 6th grade don't want to share a bathroom with a 5th grader. So they want to be able to get into a bathroom that's much quieter or a single stall. And they don't. And I once had a little girl who went to a sleepaway camp that had outhouses, and she came home. She hadn't pooped the whole 2 weeks she was at camp. She goes, I'm not pooping in that outhouse. I can't say that I blame her, but she had a lot of problem afterwards. So, you know, you got to check these things out and find out and work with your child, and don't make assumptions they're going to be okay because they might not be. So things to look for. Carol said it was okay to mention, like, where you could buy some things that might help your child. So number one, I would go on to Amazon, and there are some fabulous books written by a urologist, a pediatric urologist, who talks all about poop. And his name is Steve Hodges. And he's known as Dr. Pooper. And he actually wrote this adorable children's book. And no, it is not about me. But the title of the book is Jane and the Giant Poop. And it's a great, funny story. It's a wonderful children's book. He also wrote a book for adults, for parents, called It's No Accident, or something to that effect, but it's by Stephen Hodges, or Hedges, and you can find it on Amazon, but it's a fabulous book, and he spends his time as a pediatric urologist. He wants his kids to poop every single day, no matter what, and that helps to control the pee issue. That's important. That transitional toilet seat you can find on Amazon. You can find ones that are $40, and you can find some that are $70 or anything in between. So if your child's bottom tends to slide through the adult toilet seat, get them the transitional toilet seat if the child considers themselves too big for the child-sized toilet seat. An item called a wobble watch, W-O-B-L, it's about $40. It's a watch that has 8 vibrating timers. And you can set those timers to remind your child. It will vibrate so nobody hears it beep. It will vibrate and tell your child to go to the bathroom. Those are all great things to help make your child independent. There's supposedly a new Fitbit coming out, I think maybe this summer, that will allow you as a parent to track your child's toileting habits. And there is an app called LUTS. LUTS. Which is looking at lower urinary tract symptoms. And that app on your phone will allow you to track your child's poop and pee habits.
Wow.
These are all great extra tools that you can use.
That's great. I mean, I'm amazed that we have such tools that can help so well. I mean, that's fabulous.
Kids are supposed to be kids. Kids are supposed to go out and have fun and not have the worries. So if they have the worries, we need to work through the worries. If they have these other issues, ADHD, Maybe they're on the spectrum. Maybe they have ADD. We try to do our best to keep them focused to get in and go to the bathroom. Sometimes it's turning out the lights, keeping it quiet, having them in the right position. If your child is one that maybe has a weighted vest in school, that does wonders on the toilet because it calms them down. Put the weighted vest on. Invest in one. You can get that on Amazon too. So there's all kinds of tools you can use to help.
You want to give us the name of the doctor again with the books?
Stephen, I believe it's Stephen Hodges, H-O-D-G-E-S. If nothing else, look up first, Jane and the Giant Poop. And then you'll see his name, and then you'll find the book called It's No Accident.
Nice.
The guy said, and he's funny. And having a little humor also makes you feel a little more comfortable to go, hey, wait a minute, I'm not the only person that has a child with a problem.
Interesting. I think he goes by Steve Hodges because I just looked him up as you were talking, and that's how I found him, Jane and the Giant. And it's Steve Hodges because I kept doing Steven, and I couldn't find him. So, yeah, he's got some cool books here. Bedwetting and Accidents Aren't Your Fault. The MOP book, which is a guide to only proven way to stop bedwetting and accidents. So he's got it going there. That's cool. Thank you. Well, Jane, as usual.
You could give me a whole day and I'd still go and talk and talk and talk. Sorry.
Well, you know, I don't even know what to do anymore because it's like you're like no one else that comes on this show. I just sit and listen to you because you're just such a, I said it to begin with. You are an absolute plethora of information. And it's just always fascinating to hear you talk because it's such a topic that we never talk about, that we never have enough, you know, we just don't make the time to know about it. And you devote life to it, and you just have amazing, amazing amounts of information.
I love children. I love them, and they need to be kids, and I don't want them to have these concerns and worries and accidents.
Well, and I think you just made that point so clearly in that just the simple fact that we have to teach people, kids and older kids, if they've had some issues at a younger age, we really do have to teach them how to poop and what to do and when to know. And, you know, it's like we don't think about it because it's just a human bodily function that's supposed to happen. So why do we have to think about it? Why do we have to teach anything? Of course, when a child is growing up and they reach those particular years, we know that that's coming and we've got to do the potty training because we can't have them going in their pants all the time. But we never really put it together for this is how you do it and this is what you have to look for and this is what you have to make sure you do, you know?
We can't assume it'll just happen and we go off to work or to exercise class and let the child figure it out. They can't. They need your help.
Right. Well, you know what, though? I think the key to that is parents don't know. And they don't know that they have to teach it. They don't think about it. Nobody gives it the thought. So they don't know. So they can't do what they don't know. And
Exactly.
Wow. This is amazing because it just gives you a whole new perspective on everything. I mean, just think about it, on everything. The things that we take for granted, perhaps we should give a little more thought to for how and when and what and is it, you know, are things done correctly or are we just taking them for granted?
Right.
And it's just amazing.
Right.
And then just think about the stress factor that will relieve for kids if we just taught the parents ahead of time to do this.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, it seems so simple, but yet it's obviously so complex. It's just amazing.
Right. And children aren't born with a manual of the how-tos. We got to, like, figure it out. And as I said to my oldest son, I'm not sure how you came out so normal. I didn't know what I was doing when I started.
Right.
You know, and they're all successful, and they just laugh at me, but you don't know. You just kind of wing it and go and hope that you learn everything from the doctors. But we're not born with a how-to manual attached to us.
Right. Right. Amazing. On that note, I'm going to say thank you. And
you're most
welcome.
Of course,
you are always welcome to come back. You have a standing invitation.
Thank you.
And I can't thank you. Oh, because it's just amazing. You're just always so amazing, always. So
thank you.
You just let us know when you want to come back, and we'll do it. Do you want to give out any information on people getting in touch with you?
They can contact me at jkaufmanpt@comcast.net.
Okay. Great.
Okay.
That'd be great.
All right.
Yep.
You take care, everyone,
thank you
for listening. All right. Okay.
Everybody.
Yep.
We'll see you
again
in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
We do not have outro music, so I'm going to let it go and just say thank you, everybody, and we'll see you again in a couple of weeks. And stay tuned. We're going to hit you with some good stuff. Okay. Good night, everybody.